Class is in session.
Good evening, class. Welcome to Binary Gamer. I am your host, Tony Spears, and this is the show where we talk passionately about the thing that we're passionate about, which is video games. I am joined this week, once again, by my podcasting bro brethren, friend, and long distance, like, video game love affair, I guess you'd say. I mean, pretty much whenever I can't play with Chris, I'm like, you know what? Kurt is down, and then Kurt is usually down to play. I am joined by Kurt. Say hello, Kurt.
Hello, Kurt.
So this week is kind of a weird mishmash of things. I got so caught up in making a video that I forgot to prep for the podcast, which I guess says something about my multitasking skills. But making the video did give me an idea on something to talk about, which is like basically our favorite fictional universes and why we love them so much, because I think that that's one of the things that draws a lot of people into playing video, like certain video games. So after we talk about what we've been playing the week that was, if you will, then I figured we just get right in to our favorite lands of lore and go from there. So what do you think, Kurt?
I think it's going to be good. Now, you're talking fictional universes specifically related to gaming, right? Or are we throwing, like, all kinds of stuff in there?
I mean, if you think about it, there's been games based in The Lord of the Rings, based in Star Trek, Star Wars. So, I mean, there's really nothing that games haven't touched in some way, in some form or fashion. I mean, granted, there are certain ones that are excluded. Like, luckily, there's not a 50 Shades of Grey game, and I think that would be the worst dating sim ever. So, I mean...
I don't know, dude. What is that one with the Dream Daddy? That turned out to be pretty good, apparently.
Yeah, but Dream Daddy, Dream Daddy, yes, was a really good game when it came to the dating sim aspects of it and the stories and characters. But when you look at 50 Shades of Grey, I don't know. I don't think you could turn that into a good game, dating sim or otherwise.
I would have to agree with you. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, Dream Daddy standalone is pretty good, but I don't consider that like a fictional universe. That's kind of like a solo entry, if you will. Kind of like Doki Doki Literature Club, where it's like the, you know, it's a cool game, but like there's no world built around it. You know what I mean? It's just this one standalone thing. All right. So let's talk about the week that was. So Kurt, what have you been playing this last week? And like what have you been getting into?
Well, since everyone else seems to be playing Path of Exile, which for some reason I just can't get into, I've been doing my own solo thing. When I play solo games, I play Overwatch. I've been testing out the new hero, Bridget. She is insanely fun. She's got a short-range mace flail, hits everything in front of you, a long-range short knockback, and she has like this nice little shield, AoE pulsing ultimate for heals and armor. She sounds like a total package, but I forgot to mention that she can stun people too.
So I've actually been hearing good things about her, like as a character.
She is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I've also I hopped into the game just enough to like test her out in like the practice arena. And I like her mechanics, but I can't bring myself to get back into Overwatch right now. Like, it's nothing against the game. And they've been adding in a lot of really cool stuff, and like things are looking really good in the Overwatch universe. But man, I just can't bring myself to play a competitive shooter right now. I don't know why. It's just not in me right now. But her as a character and gameplay mechanics, stuff like that, she seems to be almost like the antithesis of Doomfist, where like she can get in close, but she can keep you at a distance, and she's all about buffing other characters. So that's pretty cool.
Kind of. I mean, I use her as more as like a support off-tank / secondary healer. I think she fits that role really well, especially if you're only using like a one shield setup, like running just an Orisa or just a Reinhardt. She functions really well as someone that you can just tunnel behind and use that shield. It's got 600 health. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, it definitely seems like lately they've been coming up with more like, I guess, hybrid classes, kind of in the way that Heroes of the Storm did, where like Heroes of the Storm, well, they've only introduced one hybrid class really, but they've started kind of playing with different like, you know, different variations of the same character. And I think it's really cool. And I think that's cool that Overwatch is doing that, where it's like, well, like, Bridget can just be in your face, but she can also be good support, and she can kind of off heal if she needs to, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that's really cool that they're...
Oh, she can chase down some of the squishies with low mobility incredibly easy.
Yeah.
Like, Torbjorns cannot touch her. She just puts that shield up and runs at you, and she's running at the same speed as normal. But she gets to use her little shield charge, and all of a sudden, look, you're stunned. Now I'm inside melee range. I can just left-click, dodge your shots while I whittle you down.
Yeah, it's a... I don't know. It seems like they're doing that game right, and I'm really glad that it still has such a high fan base. The concurrent player count is still really high, which is good. And I mean, I'm just really happy that Overwatch is still doing as good as it has. As a hero based like class shooter, it could have went wrong in a lot of ways or got stale, but luckily it didn't. They keep it fresh and they keep the content coming out, so I can't really complain.
I think most people that I know have kind of leaned away from it. They go back and play it for a couple weeks here and there. They go and do something else for a little while, and then they come back. But it is one of those people just do keep coming back to it. Yep. I think they've definitely done it right.
Yep.
Fun little teaser on the Blizzard World map that they just released. They put out a special area of the map called Snaxxramas, where it's like Naxxramas. Except you go there to get food and drink while you're going through the rest of Blizzard World.
Wait, so what is Blizzard World? I am not aware of what this thing is.
It's just one of the extra maps that was put onto the playing field. It's references to StarCraft, World of Warcraft, all of their other titles.
Okay.
Diablo.
So this is in game. For some reason, I thought like the next BlizzCon was gonna have like it was gonna be in a theme park or something. It was gonna be like, this is rad.
Oh, I'm going to be pretty upset if they don't name their snack bar at PAX or at BlizzCon Snaxxramas. I mean, I saw that and I'm just like, damn, that hits me right in the awesome feels.
Yeah, if you're a big fan of puns, it's hard it's hard to not enjoy Snaxxramas.
And Blizzard does puns so well sometimes.
Yeah. Or just like small little variations on things, like it's not really meant to be a pun, but you're like, oh, I get it now. Okay. And then like when it finally clicks, it's awesome.
Exactly.
So aside from that, what have you been playing?
That's pretty much it, actually. I've been looking around a couple of things. Like I played a game or two of Vermintide 2 here and there.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Vermintide 2 this week, even though that has been, when I talk about what I've been playing, that's primarily it. I feel so bad, man. There was a really big update in Monster Hunter World, and I kept telling myself, like, all right, it's time to get back in there, man. I got to face this Devil Joe that everybody keeps talking about. And every time I'm getting ready to fire up the PS4, I'm just like, oh, man, but I'm so close to level 18 with my dwarf. I could just run a map really fast. It won't, you know, like no one will know. No one will know the difference. And then before I know it, I've done 5 maps. And I'm sitting here wondering where all the time went. And I'm like, oh, it's 2 in the morning. I should definitely go to sleep.
Usually a good idea at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's not so much for my case, but, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. It's definitely, I don't know, man. That game has its hooks in me super hard, which is weird because I never had this kind of, like, love and or addiction, I don't, whichever one you want to call it, for Left 4 Dead, even though this game is very much Left 4 Dead in that way. But I think that it does tie into my love of Warhammer, which is kind of what I wanted to talk about this week when I'm talking about like our favorite fictional universes, you know what I mean? Because...
Exactly. Go ahead.
I think if... So real quick, we are going to change topics and we're going to go from the week that was, because Kurt's been playing Overwatch, I've been playing Vermintide and working on this video, but... Now we're going to talk about the actual subject of the week, which is these fictional universes and why we love them in games. So, again, I think the main reason why I like Vermintide 2 so much is because it is set in Warhammer, and I really, really like Warhammer. It's, I don't know, man, like I'm guilty of just like reading through wikis and like going to the Games Workshop website and just reading just dumb made up stuff, just dumb made up lore about characters and different events. and like places and things set in these fictional, in this fictional universe. And I don't know why I find it so appealing, but I do. And because in reality, it's not like, oh, I read this because it's happy fun times. Like, no, like Warhammer and 40K in particular are very dark and very bleak, but it's, I don't know. It's the way that everything is depicted and like just the paragonal stature of some characters. And then like, you know, the very human basic nature of other characters that draws me into it. Like, I don't know. It's just absolutely fascinating to me. So I think that's the big draw to me for this game, is that I'm sitting there and I'm playing through all these Warhammer stories that I've read, and it's awesome.
So what is the Warhammer universe? If you can give me like a super short description of it. Because as far as I know, I got the game and I went in and I started slaying mice because they were in front of me trying to kill me. I don't know anything else about it.
Okay, so, oh man, I'm actually really glad that you answered, that you asked this question. Okay, so the basic thing you need to understand is that the only difference between Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40K is that they take place in different, like at different points in the same history. They're all based in the same universe. So essentially Warhammer, the entire basis of Warhammer, there's literally a helicopter outside my window. Give me 1 second.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
All right, sorry about that. Helicopter literally flying outside my window. So Warhammer basically is set in a world where due to magical powers beyond the reckoning of mortal men, two rifts have been opened up at either pole of the world, right? There's a northern rift and a southern rift, and they lead into what is essentially the realm of chaos, which you later come to know as the warp. So essentially these gates allow magic to happen in the world. So imagine, like, you know how like the magnetic field of the world is represented by like the concurrent lines that go from north to south?
Yeah.
Now imagine that, but instead of it being magnetic energy, it's magical, air quotes here, winds. It allows magic to happen in the world, but also allows creatures of chaos to exist in our world. So then you have different factions. You have, when broken down to its most basic form, you have dwarves, you have elves, you have the northern chaos tribes, essentially, who are the like worshippers of chaos. And then you have the Skaven. Okay, so the Skaven kind of are the predecessors to the Tyranid in a way. Oh, and then you have orcs as well. Orcs have and always will exist in Warhammer. But anyway, so essentially everybody's at war with everybody. I mean, there are certain alliances, but for the most part, everybody's at war with everybody. Like the dwarves and the humans are allied. The Skaven aren't really allied with anybody. The Greenskins just want to murder everything in their way because that's what they're designed to do. And then the northern tribes are just waiting for the chosen one to show up and lead them south for the end times, which is an event that actually happens, which is technically what's happening in Vermintide. So long story short, in Vermintide, the five characters that you're playing between all represent kind of the allied factions, if you will. The only thing that's missing from Vermintide is the orcs. But during the end times timeline, the orcs are kind of not really involved. There's small skirmishes with orcs during that period. But for the most part, it's the Skaven allying with the Chaos Warriors in the north and realizing that if the Skaven don't ally with them, they're going to get smashed. Like, they won't win because the northern Chaos guys have essentially like the chosen one, the one that is going to cause the end times and kill the reincarnated representation of Sigmar, who is like the God King in Warhammer. And yeah, it's all just bad news. So in reality, what's happening is they're really just kind of delaying the inevitable. They give you glimpses of like, oh man, everything's going to be okay. But in reality, it's not, because all these events have already been written. So you're playing through the game and like you get these little victories and you're like, yeah, it's awesome. Like, we stopped these bio trolls from coming around, or like, you know, spoilers for the game, but whatever. You know, like, we killed this Skaven warlord. We're turning the tide. But in reality, no, things are so much worse everywhere else. It's like just this like inevitable wall of death that is moving south and just taking out everything. So that's the basic rundown, I guess you could say, of Warhammer as it pertains to like the overall universe and how that ties into the game. Because essentially once the end times happen, everything goes to crap until the Emperor comes around, which is where 40K starts. And essentially, so there's a lot of debate on whether the Emperor is actually Sigmar or if the Emperor just came about because there was a, you know, a champion space essentially vacant for so long that some type of paragon had to come about. But for the most part, the end times, once the world goes to total shit and the Emperor comes around, there's like a gap of time there that doesn't really need recording because everything is just total crap. And then that's when 40K starts. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. Like, I imagined initially it was just this world filled with humans, and all of a sudden it's being overrun by rats. I didn't know if it was a plague or what.
So the main thing to remember is, like, the Skaven come about because of dark magic. And, like, so the big, not quite defined origin of the Skaven is that a giant bell was rang one day. Essentially, these people...
Any correlation to the screaming bell that we cleared last night?
Yeah, so basically, the Skaven view any type of bell as, like, a religious instrument, but sometimes they'll find one that they believe is, like, infused with power. And so they'll, you know, they'll essentially find a place to worship it. And in the hopes that it'll increase their power as a species, I guess you'd say. But yeah, the whole Screaming Bell mission in Vermintide 2 is kind of like an allusion to the Skaven origin, which essentially is like, okay, so long story short, there's this town of people and they wanted to build a huge temple, right? And so the tower that they built for the temple was just going to go higher and higher and higher until it scraped the heavens. So then they wanted to cap off the tower with something, but they didn't know what. Then this mysterious stranger shows up and is like, hey, if you pay me, I will complete the top of your tower in one day and it will be awesome. So the people are like, okay, cool. So they pay him. He goes into the temple. And then 24 hours later, they all show up and there's a top to the tower, and at the top is a bell. So then the bell starts to ring. It tolls 13 times, which is the totemic number for the Skaven. Like, they have like the Council of 13, which only has 12 council members because their god, the Horned Rat, sits as the ever-present 13th person on the council. But anyway, so the bell tolls 13 times. After the 13th toll, all of a sudden the Skaven show up. Like, there's no like explanation of like if normal rats got mutated into them through magical means, if they'd always been there, but the bell kind of brought them out of hiding. There's no real telling, but like the bell tolls 13 times, the Skaven show up, completely wreck that town. And then that town becomes the capital of the Under Empire, or like the Skaven Empire. And then it goes on from there.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that definitely gives me a bit better understanding.
Yeah. And then the only real reason that the Chaos Warriors, like the human bad guys, are in the game, I think, was that lend some kind of dynamic to the second entry in the game. Because in the first game, you were just fighting Skaven and you were only in one city. You weren't going to a bunch of different places. You were just in Uberstrike and you were trying to like take back Uberstrike. But that completely goes to the wayside. Because so in the prologue, they explain that you got captured, which is essentially what happens at the end of Vermintide 1. The games like run concurrent to each other. So right after Vermintide 1, the heroes are captured. They escape from captivity. And then they make it to the outpost where Olenda, I think her name is, that peg-legged mage chick, like allows you to hop from point to point all over the Reichland using the Bridge of Shadows in order to complete missions so she can figure out how to shut down the Skittergate. Because the Skittergate in the Skaven mythology essentially is a like permanent portal that will allow the Horned Rat to come through and then just way laced to everything. It's bad. Muy bad. Again, these are all things that have been written but have not happened yet as far as the Warhammer universe is concerned.
So if they haven't happened yet in the Warhammer universe, they're all things that are just like visions, or we know they've happened because we've seen what 40K has to offer, or...
Well, okay, the best way to explain it is like, imagine you playing a Warhammer fantasy game is like you playing through a book that's already been written. Like, you're reading through a giant like history book, and essentially that's being played out in the game is the best way to think of Warhammer fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah, because like, as far as the overall Warhammer universe, you know, the combination of fantasy and 40K are concerned, the end times have happened. So that just, it's done.
Neat.
Yeah.
So it's got a bunch of fun aspects to it, but I got to hold you back here and say it's not the best.
Well, like the best fictional universe?
Yes.
Oh, no, I mean, definitely not. There are definitely ones that are better. Just for, I don't know. I can't explain why I like it so much. I just do.
And everyone has their own. Yeah. Is that the one that you were going with for your favorite fictional universe was the Warhammer?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tie between that and, I mean, I would probably say, like, if I can't choose Legend of Zelda, because in my opinion, that's like, that's one of the best and is kind of an unfair comparison, I'd have to go with Halo, just because the Halo universe is really, really deep if you know where to dig. Like, if you start digging into it, it's really, really cool, like, how that whole thing plays out. It's pretty awesome. It's not just the story of a cybernetic, you know, killing machine that's going around with a voice talking in its head. Like, it's actually a lot more deep, and you learn things about the characters. You learn more about Master Chief and things like that. So that would probably be my second favorite. And then, yeah.
I do enjoy the Halo one quite a bit.
Yeah.
But you said something I want to touch on now, which is, why does Zelda not count?
Well, because, and this is something I touched on in my video. So, I like, when you look at Warhammer and Warhammer 40K, Games Workshop essentially slammed the gavel down and is like, this is canon, this is it, this is what happened. Now, stories can be interjected in the middle of those things, but like I said, the book's been written already. So, like, Vermintide can happen because the Vermintide end times, that whole thing has happened already. They're just interjecting the Uberstrike 5's story into those events. So like that,
okay.
Like that's kind of something they can get away with. Whereas like in Legend of Zelda, there's never been the slam of the gavel being like, this is lore, this is canon. Like the creators of Legend of Zelda have purposely said, like, we don't like to canonize things. We don't want to lock things in the lore because then it puts limitations on what they can do in future games. So like you don't have books based on The Legend of Zelda. I mean, they do. Like, there's graphic novels and stuff like that, but those are really loose interpretations of existing games already. There's no other media made by Nintendo that backs up what The Legend of Zelda is that isn't the games. So there's no real wiggle room, but they can't tell the story of somebody that happened during the events of Ocarina of Time because you touch every inch of Hyrule in that game. So there's nothing happening behind the scenes. Like, you even figure out what Sheik was doing in the time that you don't see her or him. You know what I mean? But they don't have a lot of wiggle room when it comes to that. So the lore behind Legend of Zelda is really cool, but it's hard to like tack that down as like the best because it's not concrete. It's so fluid that, you know, you can make theories about anything. It's like, well, all the different places that you touch on in Legend in the whole series. So like, you have Hyrule, everybody knows Hyrule, but then there's Termina, there's the two separate worlds from the Oracle series, there's Koholint Island from Link's Awakening, Lorule. There's all these different places, and so it's like, well, where do those fit in? If you ask the people at Nintendo, they just shrug. They're like, you know, it's in here somewhere. Well, no, like, where's the map? And then, like, you start seeing all this stuff online of like fan made stuff of like, well, this is my theory on how it all fits together, which is cool, but it's not canon. So like, that's why I think you can't really include it when it comes to lore, because it's like, it is a fictional universe, but it's not one that's like locked in. You know what I mean? It's so fluid and there's so many theories going around that I don't know. I just, yeah, it's kind of hard to explain, but like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, there's no set rules. There's no framework. It is really cool, but it's not,
I think that's mainly just when you take the whole Legend of Zelda series, then you focus on them as a whole. If you were to like take each individual one and focus on like what's going on within that particular game, then you could definitely say like, yes, this is a Zelda lore. Like, this is what happened. And I know like you are mentioning online fan theories, but I think one I came across that I thought was pretty neat was kind of like a Back to the Future type deal, because there is that time travel aspect. There's also like three different canon timelines that I think Nintendo has acknowledged, and they don't explain exactly what has happened within each one, but in a nutshell, one of the Triforce pieces has actually gone missing in each one.
Okay.
So that is how like the three different pieces all, or the three different timelines all fit together, is during the time travel instance in one of the games, they have different things where it's like in one of them, Link never rescues the hero and his Triforce symbol is lost. And another one is like Zelda is captured and killed and never seen from again. And then another one is like, I forget what it is exactly, but I think it's the Breath of the Wild one where Ganon gets all three Triforce pieces and he becomes the Cataclysm himself.
Hmm.
That kind of just like splits the world.
Yeah, but then, but like I said though, like it's all theory. So, I mean, while those are all cool and like it's definitely stuff I would listen to, it's never stuff that I would put down as like, this is concrete, this is the thing, because it's never laid out that way. So like, that's why I think it's really hard to include The Legend of Zelda in a lore discussion. And even if you do break it down into like the separate games, in reality, then what you're doing is you're just saying this is a really cool standalone story as opposed to like lore. Because if you look at like the Halo games, for example, like the Halo games, those are stories set over like a timeline of events. And then,
yeah, but there were a lot of people when the first Halo game came out that said, we love the story behind this. This is some awesome lore.
Yeah.
You don't need a long series. Like, if they had put the second game in a different world, then you would have something along the lines of like, okay, this is the Halo series. This is the Halo 1 world, the Halo 2 world, kind of like you have a Link to the Past world, a Breath of the Wild world.
Yeah. But
you could still have like a Zelda universe if you wanted to pick one and say, I love the lore from this one. Like how the Sheikahs and the Sheikah Slates all correlate to each other in Breath of the Wild. That one has a lot more lore built into the actual game of it than I feel a lot of the other Zeldas do.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you there, where Breath of the Wild definitely gives you glimpses into, air quotes here, the past, that is like, oh snap, this looks like Lon Lon Ranch, or like this is for sure the Temple of Time. Like, it does allude to a lot of those things. But at the same time, when you're talking about Halo, like, even if if Halo 1 had been the only game that came out, for some reason it flops, and then Bungie never makes another Halo game, right? It's just a good standalone story. But because they made the subsequent games, and then they got the three, right? And it's like, okay, cool, this is Master Chief's story, and then presumably Master Chief dies at the end of three. Then after that, they made Halo Reach, and Halo Reach is essentially a prequel to the events of the first Halo game. So in that way, they're building out the lore. They're building out the universe of the Halo universe, because they're explaining different events that happen and how they correlate to each other. Because like, think about, and it's funny because you don't think about it until years later, or I didn't anyway, but if you look at the first Halo game, it is such a cold open. Like you're going through, everything's copacetic, and then all of a sudden the Pillar of Autumn is attacked by the Covenant, and it's like, what the crap is going on? And they're like, oh, we're gonna need the Chief, and then they wake him up, and that's it. It doesn't explain anything to you before that. Like, it doesn't tell you that they're trying to run away from the Covenant, that, you know, he's the last Spartan. Like, none of that. It's just like, okay, like, he's almost like the Doom Marine in that way, where he's just kind of an avatar of destruction. But then as the games go on, they flesh him out and they explain things. And then after three, they go back to Reach. You're like, oh snap, there were tons of Spartans. And then, you know, if you read the books and things like that that take place, you know, in between the games and stuff like that, it explains a lot more. But The Legend of Zelda, like I said, it doesn't quite hit those marks. I mean, Breath of the Wild did a lot in that vein, but it never like it never goes back and explains everything. It just it leads you to speculation and theory is what it really does.
I still personally feel like if you wanted to say, I love the Breath of the Wild lore, you could pick that as like its own standalone universe to explore in depth, though.
Well, yeah.
I don't feel like extra titles are a necessity for a game to have incredible lore.
Okay, so then let's take this for example. So Horizon Zero Dawn, right? It's a standalone title. I mean, I'm sure that with the success of it, they'll make additional games. But for the most part, it's a single game. And you have your main character, you have the story that she goes through, and then you have the world that it's set in, and that's it. Like, you have the start of the game, you have the end of the game, and that's it. Now, do you consider Horizon Zero Dawn, with as fleshed out as the story is, to have lore, or is that a standalone story?
I have actually never played it.
Okay, so, that's probably a bad example. Okay, Fallout. Prime example, okay, the Fallout series, right? You never play as the same person twice in a Fallout game. You're always somebody different. So, like, you start out as the Vault Dweller, and then you're going through, like, the only similarity is that you're always someone starting out in a vault. Unless, I guess, if you count Fallout New Vegas, because I don't think you start in a vault in that game. But regardless, like, you're always playing as a different protagonist, but it all takes place in the same universe. So it's like you're not following the same character, but it's all still happening in the same timeline, same universe. So that would have lore. With The Legend of Zelda, you never have like a definitive moment in the game where you're like, oh snap, this takes place immediately after Link to the Past, or this takes place, you know, before Ocarina of Time. There's no indication of that. But like I said, Breath of the Wild probably did the best with it, where they were talking about, or, you know, they alluded to and showed you different locations and different things that looked like locations from previous games. So I guess in that way, it kind of all ties together. But really, the only thing that you have that truly ties it together are like very specific landmarks. Like, there's always a Death Mountain. There's always a Hyrule Castle. There's always a Gerudo Desert. And there's always the Zora's Domain. Those are the only four things that are always in a Legend of Zelda game for the most part, if it's set in Hyrule anyway. So I don't know. I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but I still take.
So do you think you could say there's a Hyrule universe that you would love?
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking the games that are set specifically in Hyrule or in a variation of Hyrule, I guess that would count as like a universe you build lore around. But then, like, do you include Wind Waker? Like, does what's it called? Does Skyward Sword count? Because technically that is Hyrule that's below you, even though you don't see a lot of the landmarks. Like, it gets, like I said, it gets real muddied because they don't ever just flesh out the information. I mean, in Wind Waker, they do. You find out that Hyrule was flooded, and that's what you're sailing over. And the different like islands you go to are like mountain peaks and stuff like that. Like, yeah, that makes sense. But in what's it called? Oh man, in Skyward Sword, it's never like specifically said this is Hyrule. It's just the land below. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Like, so to answer your question, yes. If it's like set in Hyrule, then I guess you count that as like its own timeline of lore. But like I said, it's really wishy-washy, because if it was like set in stone, we wouldn't be arguing this.
All right,
so then for you, then, since I've, you know, expressed my love and like and probably unhealthy obsession with Warhammer, then what would you say is your favorite fictional universe that a game has been set in?
Favorite fictional universe that a game has been set in? Ooh. I'm going to have to go with Ivalice for that one.
Which, if Final you're Fantasy.
Not too familiar, or some of the fans aren't, it is one of the like seven Final Fantasy universes that exist. It is the one that takes place with Final Fantasy XII, Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics Advance, as well as all the sequels and spin-offs that came with those. It's one of those worlds that I've always been a huge fan of like myths and legends and ancient heroes. Like, I almost blew, I don't know how to describe it. For lack of a better term, I almost shit my pants when in high school I had to learn that I got to read Beowulf, the original hero tale. Like, that made me so excited. I've never been so excited to read through a book. But this is one of those that kind of builds on that type of world where there's, it starts off, it's this big, long, tall landmass, and there's two gods, light and the dark, and the science of the dark rose against the gods, and they had a fight. And halfway through the fight, there were defeated all the dark scions, and they were imprisoned in crystals all over the world. And that's where you get the all the special people that you can run into and summon, like Adramelech, Belius, or Belius, Velius, all of those fun people.
Interesting. So then, okay, so I know there are certain things that all the Final Fantasy universes share. I mean, there's always magic. There's always, I mean, for the most part, there's always chocobos. Things like that. But, like, what is the... Okay, so let's say Final Fantasy XII versus Final Fantasy VII. So those worlds that they're based in, right? What's, like, the dramatic differences that makes you like the world of Ivalice over, I guess, whatever the timeline is for, or the universe that Seven is set in?
Seven is Gaia, to make it simple.
Okay.
And I do love Seven a lot. One of the things that I find just so much more different is that it's a lot more medieval and primitive and nihilistic in the Ivalice one. There tends to be all these different governments that are all vying for power and trying to control each other. Some of them are a little more powered around magic. Some are a little more powered around technology. And you get a bunch of that fun craziness that comes out. And then you get super villains because of it with people like Kefka.
Super villains.
Yeah, he's one of those super villains that I'm just comparing to just because he's from a world that has magic and is, for the most part, the country itself is run by technology. Even if that technology is stealing magic from Super B.
Yeah. I remember thinking Magitek armor was so damn cool at the time.
And it was. Like, the world that Final Fantasy VI is in is kind of like a two-sided coin. One side is nothing but technology, power, where you start, and the other side is the one that's controlled by magic. It's basically two sides of a coin. There are certain events where the magic side created extreme power, or they had these massive fights where it literally ripped a hole in the fabric of time and allowed some of the magical beings to jump through to the other world. And when those beings were found, they were trapped, they were drained of their power, which is what led to the creation of Magitek.
Okay, so essentially the, what are they called? The Espers are those things that came over from the world of magic?
Correct.
Okay.
And like one of the differences between that world and Ivalice is that there were hundreds of thousands of these magical beings that could create magic spells and do all kinds of wondrous acts. In Ivalice, there are only 26, and it's a light and dark for each one. The light are the ones that are still in the sky. The only light one that I think ever fell was the one called Saint Azura, which you end up learning, spoiler alert, is Ultima.
Oh,
and it's the ultimate cleansing magic. But when you use it, because you're in the world of the dark scions, that their crystals have been all over the world, that's influxed their energy into it, it actually corrupted Ultima, and she became the ultimate destroyer.
Oh, snap. That's pretty cool.
So Tactics is actually one of the last ones in that chain of events to happen, where you cleanse Ultima, and you end up having to kill her, and essentially just destroy the god of destruction and the god of creation at the same time.
Wait, Tactics or Tactics Advanced?
Tactics, I guess, is technically right before, but that's the one where you do the purifying.
Okay. Because I remember playing Tactics Advanced, and like it has a lot of the same characters and even it even says that it has, you know, it takes place in the land of Ivalice. But I don't know. Yeah. That's really cool.
Advance does take place afterwards, I think, is the general consensus.
Yeah.
I know they've hashed out in the past before, but it's really kind of confusing because they do have like tactics advance, and then tactics advance 2, which advance 2 takes place right after Final Fantasy 12.
Cool.
And if you go and play through 12, one of the things I didn't realize until I was putting all of this together is one of the places you go to for the clan hunt is run by a person named Mog. Which, yeah, he is the original Moogle who starts the entire clan. And he's the one who starts all the hunts for Final Fantasy 12, Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics Advanced. And I'm not sure if he's in A2.
I'm not sure either. Actually, I don't think I played Advanced 2 now that I think about it. Well, that's pretty cool.
It's fairly similar to Advanced. Like, it operates on a similar platform.
Yeah. So real quick, while I'm thinking about it, I think... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Are you done?
But that's just my favorite world, is Ivalice. All the story behind it, like the war of the gods themselves actually fighting with each other, and how when the Dark Scions fell, their power seeped away and actually infused into the world around them, which is what created such massive volcanoes or giant skyscrapers or ocean-flooded areas that weren't before.
That's rad. I don't know. I think, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I think a runner-up would probably be Castlevania. Because, like, it's never expressly stated in some of the games, but a lot of the games talk about their connection to others. And then, obviously, there's, like, the direct connection of Lords of Shadow and Lords of Shadow 2. But for the most part, the games follow kind of a timeline. And, man, that one's really complicated if you don't know, you know, like what lines up with what, but it's still really cool too. Like I like there's a lot of recurring characters. I like that there's a lot of recurring themes and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely runner up would probably have to be Castlevania after Halo, of course, but yeah. Oh man, fictional universes are cool. I mean, I wouldn't want to live in
one. They are.
I know. I mean, I wouldn't
I would totally live in one.
I wouldn't live in Warhammer. Hell no. That'd be like living in Dark Souls. Nah, I'm good, homie.
Dark Souls is just what our world really does turn into.
God, let's hope not. that is bleak and depressing on a level that I don't think I could even define.
Well, let's hope when we get to that point, the actual population of the planet will rival the amount of players that actually played it online.
Yeah. Man, that's just thinking about that. Like, and that's one that I think does lore in just the wrong way, the absolute wrong way. Like, there are people that will defend freaking Dark Souls lore to the grave, and that's cool, man, if that's what you're into. But I just don't like. There's no fleshing out of anything. There's no explanations. Unless you, like I said, you got to like really deep dive into a lot of stuff, do some serious reading, which, I mean, yes, inversely, you have to also do with like Warhammer. But man, like everything is so vague in the Souls games. It just, oh man, sometimes it is just killer. I'm like, because like it, so I never played Dark Souls 2. I played Dark Souls and I played Dark Souls 3. I don't know why I didn't play 2, but like. When I was going to go back and play it, someone was like, well, unless you want to just be frustrated, there's no real point. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to get the story. And they're like, they don't tie together at all. And that blew my mind. Like, as some, you know, talking to someone that had played all three, I was like, really? He's like, no, like, there's no real connection. I was like, oh my God, that's so irritating. I mean, there are a lot of really good, you know, fictional universes out there, and everybody has their favorite. Like, I'm pretty sure if I went on a random poll, there's someone out there that would be like, Metal Gear Solid is the best lore in the entire world because of X, Y, and Z. And I would just kind of throw my hands up and go, Earth all right, man. Earth
counts as real lore.
What's that?
Earth doesn't count as real lore.
Well, I mean, then that's like saying that Fallout doesn't count. Fallout takes place on Earth. It's just an alternate timeline.
See, and that's fine. I'm okay with that.
Well, I mean... I don't know. I mean, the same thing could be debated for Metal Gear Solid, but that's not a, I'm telling you right now, that's not a rabbit hole we want to go down, dude, because like you want to talk about convoluted. Holy crap, man. like Metal Gear lore is the kind of stuff that like you're sitting there and like you have the strings on the board, you know, with the pictures and, you know, everything, how it all connects. Like that's what it turns into. It turns into that picture of Charlie Day pointing at the board with a cigarette in his mouth, you know, from It's Always Sunny.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think this is a good place to wrap it up. I mean, fictional universes are rad, and there are some I would love to live in, and there are others I would avoid, like the plague, especially anyone where a plague has happened. But I mean, it's hard to deny that it's not fun to hop into those worlds every once in a while to play and so, you know, screw around and sometimes to save the world or in some instances to doom it. In fact, speaking of dooming it, there's a game I want you to check out, Kurt. It's called Megaton Rainfall. I just recently discovered this game and it's amazing because you're an all-powerful being, right? You are given godlike powers. And you're trying to stop an alien invasion. And, like, the aliens can't hurt you. Like, you are impervious to pain. Like, they can't shoot you down. They can't vaporize you, anything like that. The lose condition in the game is, in your attempt to stop the invasion, you kill too many, like, you have too much collateral damage. Too many people die in your bid to save the world. And you're so powerful that it actually, like, the main concern becomes, like, snap, can I take these guys out without leveling this city? It's pretty rad. I definitely want you to check that out. Not trying to like completely divert from the topic, but man, that game is pretty rad.
It sounds fun. I'll definitely check it out.
Oh, dude, it's going to blow your mind, especially when you see the scale of it. Like you can go to the sun. You can stand on the surface of the sun. Yep.
I have problems with that on a philosophical and scientific level.
Well, the character that you're playing doesn't have a problem with that. I promise you, it's really trippy. I'll show you some stuff on it later. But yes, that will do it. Sorry to go off on that tangent, folks. I just thought about that game, and I knew Kurt would really like it. So, thank you very much for listening. Remember, you can find Binary Gamer in all the places that you listen to your podcast: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Podcast, Player FM, freaking smoke signals. Send them up, and the signal will get to you somehow. You can listen to Binary Gamer in all those places. Remember, you can also head over to YouTube, search Binary Gamer, and check out all the awesome videos that we have up there, including this new one that will be posted pretty soon. Should be live by the time you hear this. And, of course, you can head over to Twitter. Hit me up at iFlipTheSwitch. My Twitter handle will also be in the description. And just come on down and, you know, we'll talk about games, talk about, you know, whatever it is. I like to get different interactions from people to, you know, get ideas for the podcast, but also just to, you know, just talk video games. I like talking video games with people because video games are rad. And
that's why he can't leave this open-ended without throwing me a title of another game to check out.
That's very true. Very, very true. Because if I hadn't told you about it while we were doing the podcast, I would have told you about it immediately afterward. But yeah, so that's going to be it. Thank you very much for listening. Have an awesome day. Go play some video games, kids. Class dismissed.